kid, I was always thinking about the possibilities of, you know, humans living and existing in a faraway star system, or maybe there's other life forms out there. I don't know. We don't know yet, but we're searching. And growing up, I started to realize the reality of just how hard it is to get humans out into outer space, finding places where we can live. But I think, you know, just looking at everything that's going on these days, I think we are getting closer and closer to space travel, not just for astronauts, not just for the astronauts. I don't know if you've been keeping up with the news. I don't know if this is news. I thought it was newsworthy. This past week, Elon Musk released a photo of SpaceX's Starship. And I don't know how many of you saw. It was just absolutely glorious, shiny big tube of metal that, you know, we're going to launch into space, and it's supposed to carry people. And I think it's everything that we'd imagine spaceships would look like in the old sci-fi movies, right? This big aluminum tube with three wings, I guess. And this rocket is supposedly is going to take the first group of space tourists into space. That's it. Just go up into space, look down on Earth, and admire looking at Earth from space, and then come back down. That's it. Not going very far, right? Who knows? And the next stop, maybe the moon, maybe Mars. I know Elon Musk has been talking about colonizing Mars. I don't know. It's kind of crazy to think about. But, you know, the future is, it's amazing what the future holds. But I also realize, just looking at all this, that a lot of science tells us that these dreams that we have of going out to outer space may not come so easy or wouldn't come so fast. There's this movie that I like a lot, the movie Interstellar. How many of you have seen it? A few of you. It's a movie, I'm going to really watch the summary, so I'm not even going to try. But basically it's about traveling through space, trying to find a new place to live because Earth is dying. And it's about traveling through wormholes in space and communicating across time. So it's a really emotionally rich movie. You know, people have often asked, what movies always make you cry? Rambo always makes me cry. Rambo First Blood. That movie always gets me right here. It gets a lot of people right here too. But Interstellar is also another very emotionally rich movie that always gets to me. But one of my nephews saw it when it came out in the theater. He saw it with his dad. And my nephew told me as they were coming out of the theater, all his dad could talk about was the scientific inaccuracies in the movie. I get it, right? He's focused on the scientific plot holes instead of the wormholes, and he couldn't get over it, and so it took away his enjoyment of the movie. And, you know, for me, as much as I'm willing to suspend my disbelief and just believe that anything could happen just so I can enjoy the movie, I do realize that a lot of the stuff seems impossible, but I also see, on the other hand, that we as mankind, that we've come a long way in figuring out this world that we live in, and, you know, figuring out how to move around the space. There's just a lot that we have accomplished as humankind. Another bit of news, I don't know if you've seen this, Kepler telescope. Recently, finally ran out of fuel after flying around the space for 8 years. And what the Kepler telescope was doing was it was just constantly fixating on different areas of space, taking in data, taking in photographs, looking for other planets. And I think the idea was looking for planets that circle other stars, looking at those planets, seeing if there's something similar to Earth, something that's inhabitable. The thing that blows my mind is the way they discover these new planets is they look at the light that's coming from the star, and as a planet revolves around the star, as it comes between the star and the telescope, it blocks part of that light coming from the star. And so they're in effect looking at the shadow and the way that the light curves around the planet. By looking at that, wrap your mind around that for a second. They're looking at the shadow and the way the light curves around the planet. So they're not looking at the planet itself, right? By looking at that, they are able to discover many things about the planet, and they're discovering planets. I mean, it would be like if I stand in front of the window there, and you guys stand in my shadow, and you're supposed to figure out things about me by looking at my shadow and the light. It's mind-boggling what we're able to do with science nowadays. Apparently there were some bits of data that, all the data is analyzed through computers, but computers miss things. And recently, they released the data, and they let people analyze the data, and there was one planet that was discovered 226 light years away. 226 light years away. That's a long distance. That means it takes light 226 years to travel that distance, right? They were able to discover a planet that far away. The planet is named, the name is long, K2-288BB. I don't know, it's called BBA. But the planet is about twice the size of Earth. This is what they discovered. It's twice the size of Earth. It orbits around the star at a distance that makes it possible for water to exist. And this quote I grabbed from the report. It was difficult to tell whether the planet is rocky like the Earth or a gas giant like Neptune. Right? By looking at the shadows and the light that curves around the star, they're able to at least somehow try to look at the composition of the planet. Look, I can barely find my papers on my table at home. Right? But science is able to look 226 light years away, looking at light and shadow, and figure out, somehow the composition of the planet, the size, the distance. It's, the more we know, the more we discover, the more we realize just how tiny and minuscule we are in this universe that we live in. Right? But, okay, some of you at this point are probably wondering where I'm going with this. It's Science and Movies Day, of course, not gay. As I've been thinking about all the advances that we've made in science, all the advances we've made in understanding the world around us, right? Both at the very macro level of looking at the universe out there, and at the micro level where we know on the very small details, we've been studying quantum mechanics, right? We're studying how atoms, electrons, molecules work. You've probably seen in the news, we're now able to edit gene sequences in humans to change humans. It's scary. It's scary the kind of territory we're getting into. But it's also just amazing that we are making so much progress. And I think mankind as a whole, I think slowly but steadily, we are making progress toward gaining mastery over this world and the universe that we exist in. Slowly, it's going to be a while, but I think we're making little steps. Right? And in this last, 40, 50 years, these little steps may seem little, but compared to the last 2,000-3,000 years, these are leaps and bounds that we're making. The question I want to ask them this morning is, what does God have to do with any of this? Right? Where does God come into this picture? As we, as mankind, as we celebrate how much we know and how much we continue to discover and know, where does God fit into all this? I hope that you've all been following along in the daily Bible reading plan. If you have, you've been reading through Genesis. And if you've been reading through Genesis, you'll see the first two chapters of Genesis deal with God at the beginning of everything as we know it. Right? Doesn't tell us what was happening before time began. But Genesis, go turn with me, Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. Many of you probably know this verse very well because every year we try to read the Bible once, and so every year on January 1st, we at least get through Genesis chapter 1, right? So we read this chapter well. We're very familiar with it. Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 says, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. All the stuff that we are discovering, all the things that we are finding out at the micro level, at the macro level, down to the cells, out in the farthest reaches of space, God created all that in the beginning. Okay? Then, we're not going to go through it in detail, but as you continue in chapter 1, over the next 24 verses, we see the account of God shaping the earth, of God creating light and darkness, of God separating the land from the waters, populating the earth with plant life and animal life. Right? So God put all of this together for us. Then, in verse 26, this is where I want you to read along and follow with me. In verse 26 to 28, we see this. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Then God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and subdue it. Subdue it. Put it under your rule. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth." Right? So here we see in the account of God creating everything, at the culmination, at the peak of creation, he creates man. Right? Not only that, but he assigns a role or a position to man. He says to man, "You will have dominion over everything that I just made." Right? The fish of the sea, the herbs and the plants in the field, the cattle, everything that's moving. He says to man, "You have dominion over it." What is dominion? The word dominion, when God assigned dominion to mankind, the word gives us this very clear image of the position that God put us in. We are to rule. He says to man, to all of us as mankind, "You are to rule over creation. You have authority over creation. You are to subjugate creation under your own authority." Right? And so we are given the position as the master of the world, if you think about it. And this was a God-ordained position, not something that we usurp for ourselves. God said it. God decided it, and then he told man, as he created man, "You will have dominion. Go and rule over my creation." This is a role that God gave us. And so when you think about that, right, all the discoveries that we've been making, all the things that we're learning about the world around us, even all the advances in technology. I mean, here in Silicon Valley, we're at the supposedly leading edge of technology. All the stuff that we're learning and finding out, everything that's been coming into humanity's grasp, all of that, God gave to us. Right? He gave it to us. He said, "Have dominion over the world." So, of course, over time, we will learn and we will discover how the world works. Right? Space travel, maybe a time will come when it is possible. I don't know. I don't know what the future holds. Maybe your kids will see it. Right? But here's the thing. God gave us dominion over the world. He gave us mastery. He says, "You are in charge, men and women." But here's where we start to run into issues with all the advances and all the discoveries and all the knowledge that we've been gaining and accumulating. Here's a problem. We tend to forget our place. Well, we forget half of it. What we remember is God says have dominion. And so we like that. We like that we are in charge. We like that we are given authority over this world. And we like that we are given the capability, the intellect, right? These brilliant scientists and technologists, guess what? They would not be able to discover what they discovered without the intellect that God gave them. And we enjoy that. We take pride in it. Not the bad pride, but you know, we enjoy having all that. And we assert that position as master of the world. We have a dominion over the world, but we forget our place, because in that striving to maintain and assert dominion over the world, we forget that we are also part of creation. Right? In the beginning was a void, a nothing. God created all of this, and we can never forget that it was at the end of creation, which makes us part of creation. God created us, then he put us in that position of dominion over creation. So we always, always tend to forget that we are part of the creation that God made. Right? Yes, He gave us mastery over the world, but we are also part of the world that He made. Right? And, you know, what happens is, instead of singing about, "This is my Father's world," the first song that we sing this morning, and I really like that song. It asserts again and again, this world, as much as we have power over it, it's not mine, it's my Father's. And so we change the lyrics of the song. Instead of singing, "This is my Father's world," we sing, "This is my world. This is my own little world, and my Father has no place in them." Sorry, that's my gosh. I'm not going to try it. But we sing, and we think in our minds, "This is my world, and my Father has no place in it." We forget that we are subjugated under His authority because He made everything. We forget that we have dominion only because He said so. Right? And our pride and our arrogance, instead of coming back and recognizing that God gave us the ability to see and enjoy and to gain understanding of the world, instead of recognizing that all of that came from God, we start trying to erase God from the picture. Right? As we understand more, we start to say, you know, "God, maybe you're not part of this world. God, maybe you don't even exist." Right? What we see a lot of times is this idea that's proposed that God was just a concept that man created to help him explain the things that he could not explain. Right? We see this with early Greek gods. Right? You have the god that throws lightning and thunderbolt because they couldn't explain where those things came from, and so they assigned a god to that. And they assigned a god to the seas to explain why there's waves. And you know, the Greeks had all these gods assigned. Right? And so, because of that, and I think along the way, people start to think the god that you Christians worship, you made him out of your own mind to explain all these things that are happening that you don't understand. And now, because we are so advanced, because we are discovering how things work, scientists, and not scientists, actually, it's more the general population than scientists. The general population, as they see more and more of these discoveries, they start to say, maybe life didn't come from God. Because now we think we understand where life comes from. We think we understand how life happens. Right? You and I, the way that we are, the way that we function, it happened over time by chance. There is no God. Right? We needed to assign a God figure to explain how everything came to be because we were too dumb to understand science. But now that we have discovered how these things happen, we can put God aside and we no longer need Him. That there's no need for God anymore because now we get it. And God was just something created by men in a scientifically ignorant time because they needed an explanation. And that's why we see more and more a divergence between science and faith. Right? There is this idea that these two camps of thought cannot get along. And I'm sure you've heard this. You either believe in God or you believe in science. Right? If you believe in science, then there can't be a God. If you believe in God, then you're one of those ignorant religious people who don't believe in hard science. Right? And so what we see is that these two ideas cannot fit together. And, you know, why am I talking about this morning? Why am I bringing these things up? Am I standing up here to defend God? God needs to no defense. God is God. He created. He is the absolute authority over everything. Whether or not you and I choose to believe or disbelieve Him, God is still God. And look, it would be like if I don't know, who am I going to pick on this morning? Evan or Zoe? Let me get a volunteer. Zoe. Okay, Evan volunteer Zoe. It would be like this morning if Zoe came up to me and said, "I don't believe you're my dad," and goes up to Alice, "I don't believe you're my mom. I believe I sprang out of a rock somewhere, and I just existed," right? She can believe that all she wants. She can disbelieve our parentage and the fact that we brought her into this world. She can believe it to the very core of her being. Does that make it true? No. Does it change the fact that we are her parents? Absolutely not. And so in the same way, I'm not here to defend God. God needs no defense from me, at the very least. Right? Whether or not anyone believes in God and His sovereignty doesn't change the fact that He created everything. But here's the problem. Here's the problem. You know, look, God's not offended or hurt people who believe in Him. He's not sitting there, oh man, all these people who reject me. He's not hurt by it. He doesn't need anybody to stand up for Him. But here's the problem, right? God will be God regardless of what we believe. The problem is, as you continue reading in the book of Genesis, and it's exciting, but it's also kind of sad, because in chapter 1, we see creation. In chapter 2, we see the woman entering the picture. In chapter 3, three chapters into the Bible, we mess up and we get into trouble. We'll cover that later, right? Not today. In a few weeks, we'll come back to that. But within three chapters of the account of mankind, we get into trouble and we lose our relationship with God, and we're going to be needing God's help. We today need God's help. Adam and Eve, the first man and woman created, they needed God's help. They got themselves into a heap of trouble. We today, we're also in a heap of trouble. And we need God. It's not about whether God needs us to believe in Him, but we need Him. And so we continue down this path of thinking that we are understanding more and there's less of a need from God. And as we start to think we don't need God in our lives, then we get into a position where we need help and we are rejecting the very person we need help from. Now look, I know this morning most of you are thinking, you know what, Jason, you're preaching to the choir. You know, all of us, many of us here, we believe in God. We don't question His existence. We don't question His authority or His life. Right? We believe, for the most part, that He created the world. So why are you preaching this? Right? We already know all this. If we stop to think about it, yes, we may believe in science as being subject to God. But if you really stop to think about it, in one way or another, each and every one of us has at some point tried to discount God right in our little picture, in one way or another. Each and every one of us, I think, I believe this to be true, each and every one of us at some point has tried to write God out of the picture. It was something like this. We would say, God, I believe in You, and I love You, but this one area of my life has nothing to do with You. This one area of my life, You wouldn't understand it anyways, God. So you'll have no part in it. You get Sundays for church, God. You'll get that. And you know, maybe for those of you who are more spiritual, you'll get Mondays for Bible study and Wednesdays for prayer meeting. So you get Sundays, Mondays, and Wednesdays, but the other times, I'm calling the shots. Right? This is how we interact with God many times. We believe in Him, we believe in His sovereignty, we love Him, and we profess that we love Him, and we give Him parts of our days, we give Him parts of our lives, but there are parts of our lives where we shut it out. And it's different for different people. It could be your work, where, God, my work, you don't understand the line of work I'm in. There's nothing You can do to help me. Right? I'm in this on my own. I'm going to take care of myself. I'm going to depend on myself. I am my own boss. Well, I work for someone, but I call the shots. Right? Or it could be your relationship. It could be a relationship where you say, God, I thank You for everything else that You've done for me. But in this area of my life, I call the shots. And I went through that before. Many of you know my story. And through high school and college, I call the shots of my relationships. And it wasn't pretty. It wasn't until I recognized God's sovereignty and I said, I'm going to stop trying to figure this out on my own, and I'm going to give it to You. And then God said, good, now you can have the best person you'll ever have in life. And I'm not kidding. 3 months after I prayed that prayer, I met Alice. And you know the rest is not history. It's we're still writing our story, right? For a long time, even though I grew up in church as a Christian and I believed in God and I believed in His sovereignty, I said, God, my relationship, you're out of it. You don't touch this. This is, I decide, right? Anything in our life, it could be anything where we think it's outside of God's grasp, where we think it's outside of God's ability, right? It's funny when we say it out loud, but there are areas of our life where we think, God, you're great, you're awesome, you're almighty, you're all-powerful, except for this area. And I don't think you can help me, right? And in that way, what we're doing is just like what many people start to do with understanding science, they start to have a divide. God, you don't have a part in this. God, you're not master of this. God, you have no sovereignty. And so, look, throughout history, starting with Adam and Eve, right, throughout church history, throughout the history of believers being on the face of the earth, we've constantly found ways to keep turning away from God, trying to establish ourselves as the authority, trying to create our own gods. And we forget that our dominion in everything was a God-given privilege. God gave it to us, we took it, and we said, okay, thank you, you're done, God. I'm taking over from here. Right. This morning, as we begin our journey through Genesis, and I don't know how long the series is going to go for, depends on how much the Lord wants to speak from it, but as we begin our journey through the book of Genesis this morning, I think we need to start off on the right foundation. Coming back and understanding again that God is absolutely sovereign over all things. Everything that we think we would know, everything that we think we can discover, understanding that He is master of it all. He gave us the privilege of taking part in His work and learning about the world, but He is the master of all, as much as we may think that we're in control. And it's a great temptation. Pride is one of the biggest temptations in life. And it could be the smallest area in your life, and this is where you need to take some time to examine your life, but in whatever area you think that you're in control, remember, we are subject to God's authority. He is above all. Right? And look, I don't know what we'll find when we go out to space one day. I don't know what's out there. But I do know one thing. I know what I'm going to find when my life here on earth is over. I know I am going to be standing face to face before God. And I know there's going to be a lot that I need to answer for. God may just look, I don't know. I've tried to picture what it's like. Is God going to look at me with a booming voice and say, Jason, on this day, on this year, this month, you did this thing and you turned your back? I don't know. Maybe all God has to do is look at me. It is his eyes piercing my soul. And I'll pray to God, I'm so sorry for all these things. And then everything comes blowing out of my mouth. I don't know what it's like. But I know that one day I'm going to have to stand before God, my Maker, and answer for everything. And at that point, what would I say? God, I thought I was better than you in this area. I loved you for everything else, but in this one area, I thought I had it under control. We need to know our place. We need to know our place within God's creation. And look, it's a good place. Our place in creation is a good place. Why? Because God calls us beloved. So start from there. I hope we start from there as a foundation as we go through the book of Genesis. We understand that we are part of God's creation and He calls us His beloved. We have such a special place in this universe. And I hope we can take some comfort. Let's bow our heads and pray. Dear God, this is your world. You are my Father, and this is my Father's world. Help me to never forget that you are the absolute authority. Help me to never forget that I exist, Lord, under your authority. Help us to remember our place, Lord, that while we have been given dominion over this world, we are still under your authority. But what a good place it is to be, and I thank you for that. Pray that you will continue to speak to us in the coming weeks as we look at the book of Genesis, as we look at, Lord, the story of our hope to be found in you and how it all started. Pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.